everybody. It's just us today. I have a guest.
How's it going?
Hello. You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Jimmy Campbell.
This is Jimmy Campbell. We don't have John today, and we don't have Scott today. It is just me. I am here to host Jimmy, to have him show off your new features, right?
Right.
Which is about features, funnily enough. So we're going to have a lot of confused overloading of the term features today.
Yeah, it typically gets thrown around like that. So.
Okay, awesome. So I'm assuming we don't have any community update for you this week because John's not here. John is traveling. Scott is traveling also. So as I said, it's just me. But we're going to be talking about feature flags or some new features that you can get access to via a package that was released last week. Was it last week?
Yeah, so we released the first preview package a week and a half ago.
Okay. Yep. What's the name of the package?
Microsoft.FeatureManagement.ASP.NET Core would be the one that you want to use if you want to hook up an ASP.NET Core. And then if you just want to do a console app, you can do Microsoft.FeatureManagement.
Okay.
And so we did split like the non-ASP.NET Core related stuff.
Okay, so you've got the idioms for each app model in each of the packages that make sense.
Right.
Okay, so if folks are probably familiar with the idea of feature flags.
Yes.
And the ability to deploy a new feature in your app and turn it on for some subset of users or for one deployment, not another, or deploy the app with all the features turned off, or all of them, but the new ones turned off, and then flip a flag in config to have it turn on at some point in time. I'm assuming this is all the type of stuff.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, well. As I said, I don't have any other content today other than what I'm sure is going to be an awesome overview of this new stuff from this team. So without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to you. So
all right, cool.
Give us an introduction and show us all you've got.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I'm here to talk about the feature management library that my team just developed. We've been working on it for a little while because we realized that a lot of microservices today, we have like globally deployed applications. Sometimes you want to release features in a certain region or something, or you just want to do A/B testing, or just dark deploy, whatever. But we've been seeing this around the community and also internally a lot, and there's been just kind of need for feature management in general. And so the idea was kind of just let's develop something that's kind of standardized, basic, simple, so we can start really building apps out at scale that have a core model that people don't have to relearn for feature management.
Okay.
And we want to develop something simple, kind of like borderlining on the extensions namespace.
Right.
Just right on top of the framework, allowing for feature management to get done in applications.
Okay, so it works in, it's .NET standard based.
It is.
So .NET standard 2?
It's .NET standard 2, yeah.
Okay, so you can pretty much use it in any .NET app then, no matter where it's, what type of app it is, you can use it in it.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And some, it's not tied to .NET Core 3. It's a separate thing. You can use it now if you want to go and get it and use it in your .NET Core 2 app. Or
exactly. Okay. You can start using it right now. It is a preview package, so you could just get it. We'll be iterating on it a little bit.
Okay.
We need to really finalize the API. We're pretty stable for the most part, but we're reserving it for as we see usage and whatnot, and then if we want to go quickly into the GA with it and really.
Okay, so you hope like GA this year, later this year sometime?
Absolutely, okay. 100%, yes.
Fantastic, so right now it's like, use it, give feedback.
Exactly.
And okay.
And yeah, we're kind of looking at things, maybe want to tweak something here and there, but overall the idea is pretty solid, simple.
Okay, right, it's interesting. In the past, I mean, I've worked at Microsoft coming up to 10 years, so I haven't built real apps for a long time, but when I did, before I came to Microsoft, my job was a web developer and all that stuff, and one of the largest sites we worked on, we did feature flags.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, we didn't have built-in framework features for it. We had a web farm with 30 odd servers in it. We would do a deployment of a new app feature, and we would just have a database table. And so the database table held name-value pairs, effectively, for the configuration values that we wanted the app to be able to read. And then we would have another column, which was things like, well, what server do you want this to apply to? So that we could roll out the app with, like a new feature turned off, like we said, and then you could turn it on one server.
Right.
You could direct, separately you'd set up your load balancer so that some percentage of your traffic would go to that server.
Mm-hmm.
You would monitor it and see if the feature was working well.
Right.
And then if it was working well, you could turn it on in a few more servers, and then you could just flip like a different thing where it would go everywhere. Or if we had features that to deploy in a compatible way, you need to do it over more than one sprint. For example, you had a database change, plus some other schema change, plus maybe an ASPX file, back then it was ASPX, whatever it is now, and you couldn't have one without the other. So you would go, well, this release will deploy this file, And we'll flip the feature off, and then the next release, the other file will come on, and then we can turn it on. So I'm assuming that's all the same.
Exactly.
It's the same idea.
And one of the things you mentioned about was like getting the servers to have the, this server has this and this server has this. Well, we're kind of built on configuration on app settings, JSON on configuration providers. So configuration providers can kind of solve the problem of getting configurations of different servers.
At a lower level, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the feature management library is just in charge of taking the configuration that the application has and making sense of it from a feature management.
So you're basically a veneer of API on top of the existing Microsoft.extensions.configuration features.
Precisely.
But geared around defining features.
Exactly. And, like define a way that everybody can utilize to define their features and what it means to dynamically enable features and provide some functionality to even do that.
Okay.
Stuff like that. But configuration provider, that is a separate thing. But actually, I'll go into that at the end because I also do some work with a team for providing configuration applications.
Okay, cool. Well, I'd love to see a demo. You got demos?
Cool. Awesome. Yes, I do. So, like I said before, the feature management is built almost like a Microsoft.extensions package, pretty low level. And we just kind of wanted to be that layer right on top of iConfiguration. And we're defining feature flags in that layer. And so, what I kind of want to start with is, this is kind of a README I'll be putting out soon for the feature management library. But so just kind of our, some of our goals, the low barrier to entry, like anybody who's doing ASP.NET Core apps, has some idea with a configuration provider, they'll be able to hook that up to this feature management library very easily.
Okay.
So low barrier to entry. Controlling things, dealing with things like feature flag lifetime. So the request, the feature should stay consistent regardless of whether you update configuration during the request, session-based things, stuff like that, or problems we aim to solve.
Okay.
And then providing integration points into frameworks such as routing, MVC filters, action attributes, some of the, make it easy to just consume right out of the box.
We're getting some questions coming in already, so I might just shoot them at you while so that they're in context. So someone on Twitch, Yaxi on Twitch is asking, is this meant for feature configuration for, say, hosting a SaaS? So I'm assuming, to extrapolate that a bit, you have like a multi-tenant service that you deploy, and then you want to be able to manage features for each tenant in that one app.
Right.
So the customer A has this feature and customer B doesn't because they didn't pay for it or something, or they've just chosen to turn it off. Or is it more for the situations I've been alluding to, because that's my experience, for like rollouts, A/B testing, that type of thing? Or is it for both?
So right now, when you typically think of a configuration provider like iConfiguration system, usually we hook it up to the application level configuration.
Okay.
So most of the time you might think that it's okay, it's just for the application as a whole, so something more like rollouts or A/B testing. But if you're doing the more tenant-based stuff, if you're able to inject, because we want to stay simple with iConfiguration,
right,
building right on top of it. If you're able to kind of scope your iConfiguration to where that's where you pull tenant configuration.
Right. Absolutely.
Or you can somehow implement, I'm thinking most of the time your tenant and data might be in a database.
Okay. Yep.
But if you have a database provider that can map that to iConfiguration, then you can absolutely utilize these APIs that we hope to become standardized for feature management.
Okay.
So I think that would be how that plugs in.
Okay. So basically, in summary, because you're a veneer on iConfiguration, as long as you can map wherever your tenant scoped stuff is through the iConfiguration interface, you can use the feature stuff.
And if that's something that becomes common, a package could come out, or we could provide the functionality to adapt it.
Yep, absolutely.
Or at least come up with a guidance of how this is how it's done.
Okay,
so
cool. I hope that answers your question.
Pretty wide open for that. So yeah, and I just want to start off with, like, in this package, we have a notion of feature flags. So that's the thing that has a name, and that's what you're turning on and off. And another type that I kind of need to discuss is feature filters.
Okay.
So you have a flag, like maybe the beta feature. A feature filter is something, a dynamic criteria, maybe based on a request. For example, super users have access to it, or people from the Chrome browser have access to beta.
Ah, okay.
That's called a feature filter. So those are the two high level concepts I'd like to just like get off before we start diving into things.
Okay.
So we have the name, feature filters. You can easily do an on and off feature, or you can add some feature filters to make it kind of more dynamic.
Okay.
And so with that, I'll kind of jump out of the giant wall of text and go into a little bit more of the application itself. So feature management, when you start out, it's really just the configuration of your features at first. That's mm-hmm. the first thing you're going to be doing. So I want to start with like what the configuration looks like. Our convention, if you're using app settings JSON, which goes into the configuration provider, add JSON file or create default builder is going to pull it out automatically. You would just define a feature management section here. And here you can see we have these items over here, home, beta, custom view data, these top level keys
right.
are your features.
Okay.
This is our convention for defining our features. The simple features have a Boolean value. This would be useful for like a dark deployment, like what you said.
Okay.
It's off, I want to switch it on.
Okay.
And as long as you have a hooked up provider that's able to watch for configuration changes, then it's going to be updated on the fly when you set that to true.
And as an example, the JSON file is change aware.
Yes, by default.
And I think that's really the only one I think that we ship that is change aware by default.
Right. The yeah. one I'm going to go over at the end
is has the service.
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic. Okay.
A service that that we're developing functionality for ASP.NET
okay.
Core.
Great.
Which provides a way to dynamically update configuration.
Okay. Cool.
So we're defining these features, the simple ones, just on and off, true, false. And then the second idea of a feature flag, of course, is the ones that can be enabled dynamically. So that would be like this beta feature right here. We say the beta feature is enabled for, and here's one of those feature filters, the browser feature filter. A feature filter, we have a few out of the box for some common functionality that makes sense to implement with features.
Okay.
For example, we ship this one, percentage, and okay. this you can namespace if you have conflicts or something. But a feature filter named Microsoft.percentage, you can set the value of the percentage, and this is basically saying 50% of requests are gonna hit this feature.
Okay. Okay. So that's the
it's
going to
be enabled for A/B testing, exactly.
Okay. And so these are extensible, I'm assuming.
Exactly. You can make your own feature filters.
Fantastic.
Right.
Cool.
So time window is another one we come with. But this browser one is one that I implemented in this little demo project right
okay.
here.
And so the schema for configuring those is generic, obviously, because this will plug in through any config provider.
Exactly.
You could set these from an environment variable or whatever it is you want to do because it comes through config. And so the enabled for is your property.
The enable for is ours, right.
And that says these are filters, essentially. And
these are filters.
Array, and then you can have multiples.
Exactly.
And then the name maps to some friendly name or type name.
Name is required.
Okay.
But then we get into the parameters.
And then it's a loose bag.
It's a loose bag. We'll pass in iConfiguration to your implementation.
Okay, cool.
You can either use it as iConfiguration or map it, bind it to your object.
Using the options mapping and all that.
Exactly.
Stuff.
Okay. And I'll go into the browser filter implementation
okay.
and kind of
show that.
So we
can have a look at the code.
So we can have a look at that.
Great.
Yeah, so this is kind of how it's defined. If you want to go simple on-off feature or if you want to do dynamic enabling, we're kind of going to try to cover the most basic scenarios that make sense. And you can go more in depth if you wish.
Okay.
That's the idea with that. So then now that we talked about what I would say the foundation, which is configuring the features, I'll go into using it.
Okay.
All right. So this is startup of an ASP.NET Core application. And we have our service collection here. Let me see here. Zoom in just a little bit.
Yeah, looks good. Yep.
All right. So you can see that we're adding feature management. And that's going to add all the services that we need to start using these APIs within our application.
Okay.
The feature filters I talked about, you
just register them by type.
You register them by type.
Okay.
You can, of course, put this in extension method or something. I kind of just want to make this explicit.
Yeah, sure.
We're using these feature filters. There could absolutely be feature filter packages developed in the future that maybe
right.
have great criteria for enabling features.
Add Damien's great feature filter pack and it puts them
precisely.
All in there.
Precisely.
Okay.
I'm counting on you for that.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's my next NuGet package, man. Totally going to be there.
Okay. So you can add feature filters. And then this last one is kind of to display the idea that this is a builder.
Okay. Yep.
There's custom functionality that we're going to open up. In this example, when a controller maybe has an action that requires a feature and you want to override the response, use disabled features handler.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll kind of show when that actually gets used
okay.
later. So once you register services, I think that's a pretty common thing. You can start using them in the application. So let's go to a controller and actually see the service that we just registered in usage, I guess.
So we have a question
okay,
about hooking into authorization. So I guess it's on a meta, it's more about understanding the lifetime of when mm-hmm. these decisions are made within the scope of the app. Because right. obviously authorization is per request, and you mentioned request. Right. Filters could be per request, so I'm assuming they're registered as scoped services in mm-hmm. ASP.NET Core. Yes. So seems like it would be...
Well, actually, filters are singleton with a method
that gets called every
evaluate request. Method.
Okay, that's a common pattern that we have in ASP.NET. That's mm-hmm. cool. So it's possible to hook into authorization? Is there a context that you can ask for?
So the feature filter is implemented in our base package, Microsoft.feature management. So it's ASP.NET Core agnostic. Okay. It doesn't know anything about it. But ASP.NET Core has a notion. There's two things to get in with the authorization. One is, how do I get data from my request or anything contextual?
Yep.
The IHP context accessor allows you to do that.
Okay, so you have to use the context
accessor. And I'll just go to browser filter now. Okay. We can see it in action.
Oh, you have to get the headers to get the string for the user exactly. agent. Okay, makes sense.
But this filter, this I feature filter that you have to extend is ASP.NET Core agnostic. That's why we need to get this IHP context accessor.
Okay, fair enough.
But then inside the browser feature filter, we can evaluate some criteria to see if I should make this feature enabled.
Okay, so that's not an uncommon pattern for things that are plugging into ASP.NET Core.
Exactly.
They want to be agnostic to the idea of a request, and then you have to rely on DI to get you that handle that gets you the request.
And I think it's a beautiful thing. It allows us to create decoupled packages.
Okay.
And it's... So,
the short answer is yes, you could totally do it. You would get the user off the HTTP context, which you can get for the HTTP context accessor inside your filter, and then from the user you can get things like user claims and then determine your authorization based on that.
Right. And then the second part, it's a little bit of a two-part story here. Something will advance a little bit more in the time to come, but is the idea of like we have that percentage feature filter that I showed. If 50% of requests are enabling a feature, you might want that to be sticky.
Okay, yeah.
And so the library exposes this notion of an iSession manager right here. I'm not using it at the moment. This is something we're going to advance on. Maybe you want to put the state of the feature, once it's evaluated as on or off, associated with the ASP.NET Core session.
Okay.
However you're managing your session. So this iSession manager, I can kind of just go into it. We'll definitely make some progress on this one, but
my guess is that's a performance. Is that just for performance? So the idea I don't have to reevaluate every single time. I can just persist the evaluation.
The idea is so you can be persistent on any way you define.
I see. Okay.
If you want, you can implement session manager, but you can store this actual session data however you want. And if that means storing it with a user on a request,
I see,
or persisting it in a database. You're free to do that. So it's just set and get of a feature state based on a feature name.
Do you have like a canonical example that might help people?
So if you have session state, you just have a cookie. Mm-hmm. You just create a very simple implementation of this.
Yep.
That just takes whenever the feature management library will invoke this.
Yep.
So when it evaluates it, set that into the session state.
I see. And then it won't.
And then when it gets it in the future,
yes, it'll
get it
do
from the
get.
Session state.
Okay.
And it won't evaluate the feature anymore. It'll just say session state knows this feature.
Okay.
That's the stickiness I want. But if you want to have it persist at a different scope, then implement it that way.
Okay.
So we kind of want to identify what makes sense to maybe be out of the box or something like that. But at least right now, we're not blocking. We have the interface. If you
I guess I'm trying to understand. I'm thinking to myself, what's a concrete example of a feature that you might want to
persist
into the session of some sort.
You have a beta access to a website for 50% of your users.
Yep.
And you have anonymous access.
Yep.
So they're not logged in or anything, but they have a cookie, they have a session or whatnot. And you just want to make sure when that guy refreshes the page, he gets the beta access still. It doesn't just disappear.
I see.
Then you would put it in the web.
Because
the
other
session.
One's random. I see.
Exactly.
You would
put it in the session of the user. So that's the kind of idea.
Okay.
And then so that kind of goes into authorization because authorization is also session based.
Okay. That makes sense. So I guess the other way of phrasing it would be for those filters that are designed to be somewhat ephemeral rather than based on context that you're getting from the request.
Exactly.
But
perfect.
Once the decision is made, you want it to be persistent
for
whoever that was.
Precisely.
You need to implement this so that you can track the evaluation.
Exactly. You don't want it to just be lost or else it's going to be really weird when people use it and it just disappears.
So you could also just make this write out its own cookie, for example, if you wanted to. You'd
have
a generic one that's just like, I always write it out to a cookie based on the feature name.
Exactly.
Example. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
So that's how we'll deal with that.
Okay.
And that will advance a little bit more as we go on. All right. So we were going to go to home controller. So the easiest way to kind of use feature management is to get the iFeature Manager interface, which is what everything is built off of. iFeature Manager is what's going to be added into the service collection when you call add feature management.
Right.
It's not async because it's built on iConfiguration, and iConfiguration is synchronous from the bottom. So
right.
You don't need to implement any awaits or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple interface of is enabled based on a feature name.
Okay.
So if in your code, you can see we're using it here. We get the feature manager. Actually, we get a feature manager snapshot to keep it consistent through
with
the request.
Yep.
And then we're just going to say, is this feature enabled? And we put our features in an enum over here. Just get the name. And then we're going to modify the view data if this feature is enabled.
Okay.
It's kind of a archetypical example of it.
Yep.
And then that's pretty much the most basic way to use it. But like I said, we offer integration points into the framework. So kind of go over those. The most common one I expect is the feature attribute here. This is kind of one of the things that we don't know if it's a little too generic. We might rename it to feature gate, just because you're gating this feature. So feature might be a little too generic for this, but we're going to identify that.
So in this case, you would 404 if the current request hadn't opted into
exactly.
This
feature.
Exactly.
Okay. By default, if you decorate this with a feature and the feature is not enabled, you're going to get a 404.
Okay.
But you remember in the beginning, I registered this use disabled features handler. So actually, I'm going to do a little bit of a custom thing. If it's disabled, I'm going to change the view to a feature not enabled view.
Okay.
Basically.
Oh, nice. So now you basically get a callback that you can.
Exactly. I get a callback because I didn't like the standard implement.
Right.
I like it. I mean,
I get it. You want to be able to differentiate between a 404, a real 404,
exactly.
And you don't have access
to
this.
So there's definitely out of box.
Whatever.
We don't want to be too complicated out of the box,
yep.
But if you want to extend it, you can.
And that attribute, obviously, I'm assuming would work on a Razor page model as well.
Yes.
And is there a way to set it via conventions in Razor Pages if you want to set it for a whole folder, for example?
I don't think we targeted that.
Okay,
not
cool.
Sure. That's a good thing.
Feature quick.
There we go. Yeah, I expect that we'll get. Right now, we started with kind of a core of integrations in the ASP.NET Core.
Yep.
And kind of build upon that. Like even
makes
today,
sense.
I was thinking I'd like to have a redirect baked in somehow based on the feature.
Okay.
But I don't have that. And I want to think about that a little bit more.
Fair
does
enough.
That make sense? So there's work to come for sure.
So someone's asking, how would you do A-B testing of a view? Would it also have a companion action for the A-B variant? So product owner, top of my head, I would be like, well, we have a feature called a view location expander, which is a thing that you can plug into an ASP.NET Core. So you could absolutely build yourself a view location expander that toggles based on a feature.
Exactly.
And then you can basically have your view file, so foo.cshtml, and you can say like foo.featureName.cshtml and foo.otherFeatureName or foo.withoutTheFeatureName.cshtml.
Right.
And then you could build a view location expander that would do that switching for you completely automatically, or you could log that as an enhancement and get them to build it for you.
Right.
But that's how I would probably start out looking at doing that type of thing.
And that's kind of one of the great things about ASP.NET Core is you can pretty much plug in wherever you want.
Right.
So that's a perfectly valid solution, but we do want to find out what those issues are, because you can see like one of the how we do that right now, how we integrate, for example, I have this third-party action filter. This is an MVC action filter, just doing some logging based on the request.
Right.
And I want to register that into my MVC kind of pipeline. And I only want it to execute if a certain feature is enabled.
Right.
So we can say what the syntax exposed from our package would be filters add for feature, then the filter,
nice.
The name of the feature.
Nice.
So now this filter is only going to even appear in the pipeline if that feature is enabled.
Very cool.
So we have the same exact thing for middleware. You can see we use a middleware for a feature, third-party middleware. This is built on the even more simple case of app.use, use for feature. I lost the IntelliSense here. Use for feature. And then, so you can even just build your application branches based on feature functionality.
Awesome.
And it's going to take this different path. If you use
middleware, it says you're writing the if statement, basically.
Exactly.
But because this is during,
and it lets you know that you are integrating into features, right, you're doing it. So if you have a task of saying, hey, for this feature, you look at this, you know where you're using features. You can easily identify it.
Cool.
So yeah, this middleware is not even going to be part of the request pipeline if enhanced pipeline feature is not enabled.
Right.
You can change that dynamically during the runtime of the application, mm-hmm, and just completely remove it from your middleware. It's just not
that's pretty cool.
Be executed.
That's cool.
That's something ASP.NET Core gives us, and we build on top of that functionality. Another thing here that we integrate with is routing. You can see that we have map route for feature. So a beta route here, or if the beta feature is enabled, sorry.
Yep.
We're gonna create a beta default route. And the new default controller is going to be beta.
Ah, cool.
Okay, so.
That's another way that you could potentially
exactly
switch out what you get.
Yeah. We do have routing functionality improvements in ASP.NET Core 3.0 with endpoint routing. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of look into that as we go forward as well.
Yeah, I could imagine potentially using a route condition as well, the mm-hmm conditional routing stuff mm-hmm that you can do.
Mm. Okay. Yes.
Someone asked just a follow-up question to something I said before about VLocation expanders. Are they not cached? My understanding is no, they're not, because you can use VLocation expanders for things like, is it a mobile device? And if it is, then give me the mobile view, or you can use it for localization. That obviously can't be cached.
Does it have a reusable property?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
No, I think that if you register a VLocation expander, I think it's always evaluated whenever the view is asked for, basically, right, from the view engine. So
sounds good. Yeah, so that's a lot of the, oh, one more important thing here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a feature tag helper. Let's see, which one is in home?
Oh, I love tag helpers.
About, yeah, so the tag helper,
oh,
feature,
nice, yep,
name, content enhancement. This is also another thing we've identified for some improvement here. Kind of have a positive and negative case.
Yeah, so we went through the exact same thing when we built the environment tag helper.
Exactly.
We started out with names, and then we realized that was wrong. We should have made it include and exclude. Mm-hmm. So we have that now in version 2. So,
right.
Yep.
Exactly. So that is there as well. If, and then the functionality here would be, if the feature is enabled, the content inside would render. If not, then the content is going to be ignored. It's not
right
going to be put into the page.
Cool.
Yeah, so that is the points where we use it. Now I'll kind of just show this thing in action here.
Yep.
All right, so I'll just boot up the demo. Let's look at the configuration to see what we should be seeing. So let's look at this beta feature. I put a beta feature into my application that had the default route. I was using the default route for it. I guess I'll just go into show that. I had a default route being added for a beta feature. I also have a beta controller, and the index method is locked down using the feature attribute. Okay, so now I loaded my application. This is the standard template for ASP.NET Core with some feature management stuff baked into it. Now we see that I enabled beta on Edge browser, all right, with that browser filter that I implemented myself. Okay, so if I go to Edge, maybe I'll see some different functionality because
right
I did something with this feature. And yes, okay, I have a feature of tag helper here adding a link.
Okay,
and now I have a new beta tab on my website. And when I go here, I can just kind of open it and start looking. Oh, the Contoso beta. This is a preview of our new layout.
Cool.
All right. And if I try to do this on Chrome, it's just not ready for Chrome yet. So it's going to hit that disable handler. But I keep doing some more work in the future, and I redeploy my app. But my configuration is independent of my app. And I want to start enabling Chrome now. So I go into my configuration. In this case, it's appsettings.json. And I just add Chrome. And we can see this is where the dynamic functionality comes into play. Now Chrome has beta.
Nice.
All right, so we had a convention for defining my features, conventions for utilizing those features in code. And now I can start going around on my apps and using this in a supported unified manner.
Right.
It's dynamic, and we're going to be building even more functionality into this.
That's a great example of the reloadable config in ASP.NET Core for folks who haven't seen it before. That's wired up by default if you're using the JSON file provider.
Right.
If you're reading config and you're reading it through the appropriate API and then mapping it through options as well with option snapshot, mm-hmm. then even if you're accessing the options after it's been bound from config to options, you'll get any changes that have flowed through from the file change. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's great.
Yep. And then so that's the feature management library. That pretty much hits on a lot of the functionality.
Is it open source? Some folks are asking where the code is.
It's not open source yet.
Yes. It's always a yes at the end. I like that. That's good. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's not open source yet, but I'm that's what we're aiming for, and okay. there's no reason for it not to be.
It is docked though, right?
Docs for it? So the team that I'm with is actually the Azure App Configuration team.
Okay.
And we're the ones developing this and kind of driving this at the moment.
Okay.
You know, eventually if you go open source, it'll be way more of a community-driven type thing.
Okay.
I'm expecting. But the docs right now are living with our service docs.
But there are docs.
There are docs. Yes, there are docs.
Fantastic. So they're in the Azure SDK for .NET Preview area.
Yes.
Azure for .NET developers. Yes. But like, I can see the interfaces are docked.
Right. So
there's a whole section on feature management.
This is
there you go.
This is Azure App Configuration, but this is where we have the docs right now.
Okay.
And eventually, as this matures, and whatnot, if it's open source, obviously a lot of docs will be there.
Okay.
The README will be there. And so, but right now it's in preview. We're kind of developing it, and growing it.
Cool.
But this kind of brings me into my next thing, which is. Like we were saying before, a lot of this functionality, at least for being dynamic, depends on your configuration providers.
Right.
And us, we're the Azure App Configuration team, and we have a configuration provider for ASP.NET Core.
Okay.
And this hooks up to the Azure App Configuration service, which it's basically a simple key value provider for application configuration, but it supports extensive querying, histories of your key values, the ability actually in the Azure portal, if you're using this thing, you can diff between like, what did my configuration look like a week ago?
Oh,
and you'll see like key values, cool. the last modified time, tags
on
it.
So it does change tracking.
It does change tracking. Cool. You can, we're working on a feature right now where you'll be able to restore your configuration to like a week ago. If you know something went wrong, it'll give you a preview of what is gonna be restored to, and it'll do it a forward rollback, if you will.
Right.
It doesn't really take you back. You don't lose the history, but it applies what it was a week ago. So we just have that service, and that's something we're working on, but we have an ASP.NET Core configuration provider. Mm. So in code in this project right now, I'm actually pulling in my config builder, I have configure app configuration, and I'm adding Azure App Configuration. This is our provider. Add Azure App Configuration is app config service. So whereas the Microsoft Feature Management.ASP.NET Core is not coupled in any way to our service.
Okay.
Completely decoupled. Yep. If you use Microsoft.Feature Management.ASP.NET Core, you are not coupled to Azure App Configuration. But since we're a configuration provider, we can give you those flags. We can enable the dynamic turning on and off of features. And that's kind of where I think the A/B testing story can really become completed.
Right.
You can go on and off. And so here, the configuration builder, we're adding Azure App Configuration, and we expose a method called use feature flags. The Azure App Configuration provider does. And this is because we store it in a certain content manner, and we kind of do a little bit of a transform before we hook it up into the actual application configuration key values. And this also hooks up watching of the key values. So when you change it in your app, you will get the update.
Very cool.
So we're using this right now. I can actually show this. Right now, I kind of just have this simple template ASP.NET Core page, but I can go into my app configuration. I have this feature manager tab right here where I can create feature flags for my ASP.NET Core applications or whatever application in the future that wants to use feature flags, and I can just turn this feature on. So this is kind of like one configuration provider that you can use for your feature management.
Okay.
And now my application is using feature flags. So it's watching my Azure App Configuration Service on an interval, specifically 30 seconds for default. And when it sees a change, it's going to go ahead and update configuration, just like I updated the app settings.json. And then we should see a change to the application when it picks up that change and I reload the website.
Right. Okay.
So that 30 seconds, we'll see if that has passed yet. No, not yet. But so you can control that interval if you need it to be shorter or longer. But
right.
One of the things you want to make sure is you're not overloading your application with like watches and changes and stuff like that. So that's why 30 seconds is kind of a respectable default. But you can see now the application just changed a little because I put a little big Easter egg literally in the middle of my application. So that's kind of a more complete story of now I have a way to be, if I want to develop a microservice, which ASP.NET Core is great for, you're developing microservices and then I want to deploy them, have feature management, and have be in the background and kind of start toggling things
right.
in a centralized manner. Like you yeah. said, I have different servers. App configuration offers the ability to kind of go servers individually.
Yep.
But like I said before, that's a configuration provider problem.
Right.
The feature management just gets the configuration. And so you can use feature management without Azure App Configuration, but we'll plug in for you if you want to use it.
Right.
And that's kind of like a more whole story.
But okay. Yeah, we've got a few more questions.
Sounds
so
good.
So let's... Someone is actually asking, would third-party feature management apps like LaunchDarkly be able to integrate with the iFeature Manager?
So it's feature manager is completely decoupled. So if LaunchDarkly wanted to start providing integration into the Microsoft Feature Management Library, they completely can.
Okay.
It's just a matter of them surfacing their configuration and the convention that we've defined.
Right.
So as long as they're able to say, hey, you can pull LaunchDarkly configuration, put it in iConfiguration Provider, and put it in this interface, then yes.
Okay.
That's because the feature management is ultimately decoupled from any provider.
Now, my laptop just ran out of power, so now I'm looking at the feed on my phone so I can get your questions and ask them here. So we get the Twitch questions up here, so I can see those, but I need to see down here to get the YouTube ones. Yeah, so the answer is like, yes, they could. I mean, the same mechanism, there's nothing hidden
exactly.
here. They either come through config, or even if they, you know, whether you do it by the a specific config provider or whether you plug in the existing ones, but all the mechanisms are there. It's not unique in any way, so
right.
it should be fine. The only thing is that there is a implied convention of how you map the config schema that you
exactly.
come up with to the
precisely.
Feature management feature, which is all fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting though, I wonder if in the future there's whether we would add an imperative way of defining features rather than one that's mapped so
yes.
tightly to config. I
yes.
imagine some folks might ask, this is great, but I want a different way to be able to plug in and provide features
yes.
with code or from,
right.
with not using iConfiguration.
Yes.
Have you ever had folks ask for that already? Or
yes.
Okay.
Very beginning stages.
Okay.
Of, but yes.
But never say never.
Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. Question. X86 Cowboy asks, is there any general guidance on what feature flags should not be used for? For example, like using feature flags as a system to separate regular and paid users of a website? Or you just don't have any opinions? Like, use it for whatever makes sense, or?
I think that answer would be subjective.
Okay.
And
given that it's right now is driven from config,
uh-huh.
it kind of already puts it in a bit of a box of what you would use it for.
Right.
But you could, like we just talked about, you could imagine in the future.
Right.
Plumbing in maybe a different way would open up other scenarios that might be a little difficult or clumsy to plumb.
Yes,
to
yes. Today. And I think I started off, one of the things I said is conventionally what I've seen is configuration is usually used for application level things.
Right.
You can absolutely use configuration for tenant level things, but usually your tenant is stored in a database, it's isolated,
right.
and that's where you're pulling data for that tenant.
Okay.
Now, if this becomes a common thing, certainly there can be a way for us to realize this, to transform it to where Microsoft.Feature Management can use that thing.
Yep.
But at least from the idea of building from configuration, it sounds a little off
yeah.
from what I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. Let's have a look here. Some folks answering that. Scrolling. Sorry, everyone. So a question about the config store in Azure. So if you're using the config store in Azure to do this, does each request to the app imply a request to the service to get the current feature configuration, or is it cached for periods of time? Now, I think you said it's polled, and then every 30 seconds you pull it down and refresh
right.
the config. So it's not every request. It's more if it's pushed into the app.
Yes.
Or it's pulled from the app, I should say.
So this is for app config pulling.
Yeah, yeah, when using
so
the config. Yeah.
It is pulling from the service.
Right.
And it will update the configuration when that changes. And one of the things where app configuration also went into preview recently, and we're also working on that, improving that. Another
okay.
thing we want to get out there by the end of the year and really be full-fledged on. We're also improving that functionality, because one thing is sometimes you want to be a little bit different than a constant 30-second pull.
Okay.
If your application is resting for an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a request an hour later and that wakes up and then you pull.
I see.
Or something like that.
Okay.
Some criteria. And those are things we're identifying. But to answer the question, right now you pull every 30 seconds with this and it's going to pull it and it's going to update iConfiguration if it sees changes.
What's the pricing and like resourcing model going to be for the service? Is it in preview right now?
It's in preview.
Okay.
So if you want to go play with this, it's in preview. It's free.
Okay.
So.
And then we don't have any announcements about the eventual pricing?
No announcements for pricing.
Okay, so try it now while it's free.
So I did want to actually get back to the tenant-based thing.
Okay.
So if I may have mixed up some ideas here, but it's absolutely valid to have a feature filter that's using user as a criteria.
Right, of course.
So that's a thing that we, for example, I use browser to enable the beta, but certainly I could have a group of users identified and analyze their group during their quest and allow them to access the beta.
So I guess then to map it back to what you were saying about tenants, you could then say, well, my features are defined via config, but then
right.
I could have a feature filter that looks at the current tenant database
yes.
and says, is this feature enabled for this tenant?
Right.
That's one way.
But normally you would expect maybe somewhere earlier on in the pipeline, you get the information for the user. You carry that contextually through the application
through the rest of the,
level.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. And then you would say, okay, does this user have this almost claim based?
Yeah. Yeah. Which we had that question before, actually.
So,
yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
That's valid. Valid scenario.
A few folks have been asking about Blazor and Razor or Spars in general as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how would they utilize this from
client-side things.
Yeah.
So we're looking at this issue. We wanted to start with the web-based application first,
yeah.
but we do know that client-side is somewhere we want to target.
Okay.
And we're trying to think of this right now. There are certainly ideas such as maybe expose an endpoint
yep.
easily, which feature flag configuration is not a secret.
No.
So if you're just exposing a route or an endpoint or something, your client-side that you're delivering can go right back and access it.
Okay.
Or it can be delivered with the client side.
Mm.
And then it can just consume it there.
And you can still do that refreshing caching thing if you wanted to. There's
well, yes. If you're going back and you're doing the endpoint consumption model, you could do the caching.
Yep.
But if you're delivering it with...
It's there until you refresh the app.
Unless you have some... Yeah, pretty much there. It's with the app.
Or until you call it again or
exactly.
whatever it might be. Yep. Okay, fair enough. But nothing there right now.
Nothing there right now.
Okay.
It's something that we definitely want to get straightened out, though,
okay.
because it's valid.
So for those of you who are using Blazor already, and you may have seen the tag helper that was shown before, and you're like, oh, well, I'd love that equivalent in Blazor, which in Blazor I think would be a directive attribute. It would be an attribute you could put on any element, any Blazor component,
mm-hmm.
And then that Blazor component wouldn't be part of the tree if the feature flag wasn't enabled. Mm-hmm. Send the feedback. Right, or even better, create a sample using the primitives that we have and use that as a starting a discussion for how that feature might look. So it seems like there's
and
a few different approaches you
could
use.
While we're on the idea of feedback, I did mention right now the app configuration team.
Okay, so Azure/app configuration
Azure
on GitHub.
/app configuration, and the open source topic was brought up. Perhaps this repo would change, but obviously there'd be an announcement for that.
Okay.
But if you want to go out and use this, the repository is microsoft.featuremanagement.asp.net/core.
Great.
Our docs are with our service feature management is down here, and this will link to additional feature management docs at the bottom.
Okay.
And if you want to file issues, github.com/azure.app/app configuration.
Okay. And the NuGet package I did paste into Twitch before. I didn't paste it into the YouTube chat, but it's microsoft.featuremanagement is the core package, and then there's feature management, microsoft.featuremanagement.asp.net/core.
Right. Pull it up to get the visual.
Yep. And that's in its initial preview. So it's 10 some preview number
right
at the moment. Yep. And yeah, no dependencies. It just runs on .NET Standard 2.
So ASP.NET Core, and then you have the core package, which is going to have iConfiguration dependency and logging.
Great. That's a great question that's just come through from Brave Cobra 2 on Twitch. As a bug fixer, I'd like to know whether something was enabled through a feature. Where would I go to look to see whether the request was handled with the feature enabled? So for me, that's a sounds like a tracing question.
Right.
Or even if you're analyzing a dump after the fact, you'd want to know where to go in the heap structure to like, right. Where's the variable that stores whether this feature was turned on? So there's a couple of different ways, I guess. Do you trace by default or log out via iLogging or anything today by default?
We don't.
Okay.
If you wanted to do this at the moment, what you would have to do is maybe somewhere in the request pipeline, if you want to have a dump, go through your features and see which ones are enabled for a request.
And then just tell you could basically write a middleware that just looks at the features that are currently enabled and just log those out.
Right.
That would be interesting.
As far as having a feature or an API that just enumerates every feature and gets their states, it could be expensive because you don't know what kind of criteria are evaluating those features. You might start running feature filters. It could be an expensive call.
Okay.
But certainly, it's a good question, and we can look into what's the proper diagnostic story for saying what feature was accessed during this request and what was at stake. I think it's valuable and something we can certainly.
And even over the life of the app running, if features were refreshed and what values they were when they were started versus when they changed.
Absolutely.
A lot of that is basically just logging, I would assume. So if you're fixing bugs and you want to get as much context about the app at the point the bug was exhibited, and you generally go to two things. You get a dump if you can, and you go to traces slash log. So, okay. So you said not right now, none of the primitives that in this first preview are logging, but we could, that's something that's easy to add.
So. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Let's have a look. Just need to look down at YouTube to make sure nothing new there. Is there anything up here? That'd be helpful looking at stack traces. Yep. Some of the context, and that was, okay. I think that's probably the bulk of the questions that we have. There's one there from, is the internet I saw in the context? Yeah. So it's similar to the question that was, basically it was the first part before the question.
It is stored in the context. You can get the iFeature Manager snapshot and check the feature. But I suppose right now what we would need to add is the ability to know which feature got accessed.
Yes, right. Okay, cool. Well, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for having
me. Sounds like folks are pretty interested in this. I'm sure we'll see hundreds of downloads of this package now that you've been on the show.
Right.
We had one late question come in. Can you decorate an entire controller with the attributes? So you've showed it on an action method. Can you put it on the controller
itself? Yes, you can. Okay, certainly. Great.
Absolutely. So yeah, I encourage folks to try this out. We'd love to get feedback. Again, pass that feedback over to the GitHub repo that was pointed out.
Right.
But yeah, thanks for coming. You don't have a Twitter handle or anything that people can directly pester you with questions?
I don't. I guess I'm incognito.
No problem. There's a GitHub repo. You can say, I saw that great demo and I want to ask more questions about what was shown. So not a problem at all.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on. If anyone has any follow-up questions, please, you can send them to me on Twitter if you want and I can direct them through internally. Right.
And there is a Slack link.
Oh, there's
here.
A Slack.
So
there you go.
If you want real time, really a real time response, I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Awesome. All right. Thanks.
Thank
we'll
you
catch
guys.
Later.